The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older.
Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts is wondering why the other host isn't at the NFL owners meeting. That's Lenny. I'm his owner. I'm Mina Kimes. I am joined today by a first-time guest of the podcast. Very exciting. I've had some of his colleagues on. We have many mutual friends who have been on the show, but this is your debut, Trevor Sikkema. Sikkema is how you say that last name, correct?
You nailed it. You nailed it. Yes.
The lead draft analyst at PFF. Welcome to the show, Trevor.
Thank you, Mina. I appreciate you having me on the show. This is going to be a lot of fun, especially the topic that we're talking about. It's very league-wide. It's very NFL draft. And you are truly one of my favorite people in this business. So I'm selfishly just excited to talk some football with you here. So I appreciate it.
That's very kind of you. I'm a little intimidated by how incredible your camera is. Every time I see a clip of yours, I'm like, God, this camera looks amazing. But it's good for me now. It's to our benefit because this is also on ESPN2. It is on YouTube. You can check it out at youtube.com/@MinaKimes if you prefer to consume your podcasts that way, or you can keep listening here because today is a very fun day. This is something I do every year, pretty much around this time every year, wait till free agency is kind of quieted down a little bit, which is go through all 32 NFL teams and assess what needs they have before the NFL draft. Now, teams don't always draft for need. A lot of times they don't. So just because we say, you know, the Cowboys, who will maybe we'll start first with the Cowboys, need offensive line, maybe they'll go receiver in there. Well, that's also a need. So anyways, point is, it's just a useful, I think, exercise to think through, especially after free agency, because I actually started building out my list, Trevor, before free agency, and then a lot of teams addressed some of those needs. And that makes their point of view headed into the draft different. Even if it's a veteran on a one-year deal, they don't have to reach maybe at the position if in the same way that they would have if they hadn't added these players.
Yeah, I mean, free agency has been fun, and I think a lot of teams did exactly what they are supposed to do, and that is, okay, there's not going to be stars out there in free agency for every single team to fill a need with, right? When we talk about top needs for teams, we're often talking about first round talents, guys that we think could be multi-contract guys for these teams. Well, when you hit free agency, it's very seldom that you'll find those players out there. But what you want to do is exactly what you said. Supplement the needs with these guys that you know can at least start for you, right? Don't make it desperate. Don't allow yourself to on draft night, especially if you're a team that's picking just outside of the top 10, even into the 20s, I would say, don't let, if there's a guy who you think is really talented, really high on your board, falling all the way down to you, you can't go, ah, man, but we didn't address this in free agency. We really wanted to hit this other position. So now we can't take this guy that we love who's fallen down to us. That's bad GM work. That's bad scouting. And so that is obviously what you want to avoid. And I think a lot of teams, honestly, did a really great job of that, which makes today's podcast a lot of fun going through these updated team needs.
So before we get into the team needs, I do want to nod to some pretty dramatic rule changes, maybe the most dramatic in recent memory, that have come out of those owner meetings that I alluded to. And there's really two major ones that are kind of making waves. One is the NFL outlawing it's not just the hip drop tackle, it's the swivel hip drop tackle, which is something that was brought up last year. It became a hot topic when Mark Andrews, the Ravens tight end, was hurt being tackled that way. And the reaction was immense outcry, especially on the part of defenders, basically to describe it to people. You kind of know it when you see it. And you can look up the Andrews tackle, and there's examples on the internet. It's when a defensive player sort of grabs a player, and while he's in the process of tackling him, he leaves his weight and he sort of almost like swings through the air. It kind of is what Lenny looks like when Lenny tries to grab my leg and it swings through the air. So the NFL's reasoning for it was that it has a 20-25% injury rate, which is very high. It's a little unclear to me how often the NFL determined that this tackle actually happens. I saw two different statements, one saying that it was like once a week, one saying it was once a game. Very, very different. So, Trevor, I guess My general rule of thumb with NFL rule changes is to try and not get too worked up about them until halfway through the season, because often the case, like during the preseason, they'll litigate it pretty heavily to try to teach teams not to do it. Yeah, I guess that's where I, you know, obviously there's more jurisdiction on the part of the refs is never a thing that anyone wants, but the injury rate does seem pretty dramatic to me. I kind of just am reserving judgment until I see how often it's actually called.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we want to make the game safer, right? We want the best players to be able to play this game for as long as they can. And when I mean that, I mean both in season and for careers. And if this is something that's obviously a detriment to that, the NFL is going to look at it. But I do hear the words of defensive players who have played this game that are like, man, you're policing everything that we do to the point where there's going to be fines, there's going to be flags, there's going to be first downs. Like, and I think that that's where I'm at the same spot with you. I'm worried about this rule change because I'm worried about the impact and the ripple effect that it's going to have on the rest of the game. But it all just comes down to how they're going to officiate it. It comes down to exactly what the rule is going to be, how it exactly is going to be written. And again, how often they're going to be looking at something like that. Is it only the ones where, yeah, okay, you were very malicious with this. You were, I think the words that they'll probably use is reckless with your lower half, right? When you say that, okay, you're wrapping a guy up and then you're kind of letting your, like the dead weight come through your lower half and it's kind of swinging all the way around. Like, did you do that on purpose? Is that something where it could have been a little bit more control? But it's like, man, kind of what you said, putting more power for judgment calls in the hands of the referees. I mean, being a ref is already a tough enough job and they already make a lot of calls that are, you know, questionable. And it's because they're trying to think of a million things and the game is very fast and all that. So it's just hard to think that a rule change like this is going to be officiated even the way that they want to. And unfortunately, it feels like the NFL is just like, okay, well, if we over-police it, that's what we want anyways. And in fact, I feel like over-policing a rule change like this could be detrimental and determine some games, which could stink.
And that is when people will get really mad if it's like a big game and 15 yards,
right?
What the actual penalty is, and it keeps a drive alive and it changes the outcome of a game. I think it'll just come down to how often it's called, whether defensive players change their behavior. We still don't really know the frequency. I alluded to that. I just, every time there's a rule change, everybody freaks out. But, you know, I feel like we sort of talk on both sides of their mouths. Like, you know, everybody's like, or I mean, whenever there's a major injury, there's an immediate outcry, oh, player health. But then whenever the rule change comes months later, there's another outcry and you kind of can't have one without the other, which sort of brings me to the next rule change, which I think really is a lot less objectionable, in my opinion, and that's the kickoff rule. So the NFL is changing after this has been speculated about for a while. It was introduced by Sam Schwartzstein, who works for Prime Video and previously worked for the XFL, which is where we saw this in practice. And just to kind of lay out the reasoning, kickoffs are incredibly dangerous. It has been the case for a while. A disproportionate amount of concussions happen on kickoffs. I was just talking to someone, actually, I did an interview for a documentary and I brought up the Ricardo Laquette injury from a few years ago where he was a gunner and just thinking about him going at full speed and then the collision and the how just unbelievably dangerous they are. So this has been something the NFL has looked at for a while to change. The rule change is interesting. Basically, if you haven't seen this in the NFL in practice, what will happen is your team, if you're kicking off, will kick from your 30. The returner will be lined up, what was it, like 10 yards behind? Or
I think so. It's like 10 or 20. There was like a landing spot zone. I feel like it was like 20 yards out from the end zone where the ball will eventually go into the receiver's hands.
And their team is on their 30. And essentially what happens is it almost and you will be penalized if you kick it into the end zone. It comes out to, I think, the 35. If it rolls into the end zone, it comes out to the 15. So kickers need to kick higher and shorter, which I think they're capable of doing. Basically, in practice, what it does is it reduces the high speed collisions and it ends up looking a lot more like a running play with a bit more runway. But that is going to introduce a lot of interesting tactics, I think. Different kinds of players will be good at it. Trevor, I find this to be pretty unobjectionable, although people got mad about this too, because people get mad about every change in the NFL. But given the correlation with injuries, the fact that, yes, we will miss some exciting kickoff returns, but I think this one, to me, feels like it's not going to... It's more like missing out on the returns rather than this impacting games the way the other change does.
I'm super excited about this. I really am. Because right now, obviously, where kickoffs are, they're pointless, right? I mean, there's just kickers blasting it through the end zone, through the uprights sometimes, and there's no returns. It's too advantageous to let the ball go out of the end zone anyways. And so I love this change. I really do, for the reason that you mentioned. It brings more of a skill element to this third part of the game, right? I think there's something, you know, innate with special teams where these are kind of the bottom of the roster guys who are literally just going, like you said, like full speed. I mean, when you are trying to make a roster in the NFL, if you're known as a special teams player, you have to give 100% effort every time you're out there, or coaches are going to replace you with somebody else. And because of that, like you said, the way that special teams are set up, like kickoffs, it's really dangerous. It's a lot of guys that are just sprinting full speed into contact because they're trying to prove, hey, I have the effort level to be on this football team. And so now it's different. You still want to be able to give high effort, and I think these guys are going to be able to do that, but it's more skills for the kickers, right? You have to be more accurate. You could place it, you know, the trajectory of the ball, how long it hangs in the air, where exactly you're going to put it. I think that's all very advantageous, because some teams are going to be, you know, they're going to be better, just like any team. Like, they might be better running their kick returns to the left or to the right, depending on which players are aligned where. And I think that it's then up to the kick team to put the ball in the opposite spot. When it comes to the return of themselves, you mentioned it's going to look more like a running play. We're going to see more of these guys who are pullers, or maybe just these like zone blocking scheme things where they're all moving in unison one way or the other. And it's allowing these ball carriers to then become one cut running backs essentially out of the backfield. So like, as a draft guy, I hear this and I go, well, okay, guys like Blake Corum, guys like Bucky Irving, guys like Ray Davis, like all of a sudden your stock's going up a little bit, because before I'd never really think about you playing special teams and kick return. Now you've got great vision. You've got great one cut ability. So it's just, to me, the whole thing not only makes it more entertaining, but it makes it more of a skill all around. The blockers, the kickers, the returners, it is a much more skillful process how to return a kick now. So I like it. I really like this change.
Maybe this will save the running back position or give them more value. So I had some of the numbers wrong. So they're still kicking from the 35. Your team, you're on the 40. The setup zone, which is where the other team is between the 30 and the 35. They are close. So, and then, you can have two returners in what is called the landing zone behind it. It looks weird. I mean, it's going to take people a while to get used to it.
Same. But,
and the aside from player safety, the other side effect is something you allude to, which is you will see more kickoff returns. Just, you know, with the rule changes in recent years, you have seen fewer and fewer. That number has gone down. And that's likely to change because of this. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. I think it'll take people a second to get used to, but I think the first time, I don't know, some team does something creative. Maybe you talked about, like, maybe they run counter or something. I don't know.
Right, right.
It'll be interesting. Devon Achane going for 45 yards week one, and maybe that'll change people's minds and win people over. So I'm intrigued by it. I think the injury thing, though, is very significant, because that play, the you know, kickoffs really, really are quite dangerous. Mm-hmm. Okay. Those are the only rule changes I wanted to talk about because they're pretty significant. I want to get to these teams. I alluded to this. We're going to start with the NFC East. So, Trevor, we're going to alternate. I'll give a team and give the needs. Tell me if you agree, if I've left anything out, and then I'll flip it to you and give you a team and you can start. So we'll go back and forth that way. I'm going to start with the Cowboys. Jerry Jones said today they're locked and loaded.
Just like they were all in on free agency.
Yes, exactly. Locked and loaded. This is the size of the gun, right? I will say, looking at this roster, I do think there's a little bit of over panicking about the state of the roster and the inactivity during free agency. This is still a very good football team. Particularly, I was looking at the defense and I was like, oh, okay, there's not really significant needs here. It's more so, I think, the reason why fans are so upset is just because if you actually are all in, and so much of the, you know, discussion about the Cowboys has been their inability to get over the hump in the playoffs, they didn't actually make moves that appeared to be the kind of moves a team that's all in would make. So that said, they did bring in the only real addition, Eric Kendrick, at linebacker. So, and Leighton Vander Esch retired. Linebacker is not at the top of the needs I have. I have offensive line, and I just wrote offensive line. You've got Tyron Smith moving on. You're probably kicking out Tyler Smith, but that's still a question. Tyler Biadasz is gone. You know, there's – so in the interior next to Zach Martin, you're looking at TJ Bass, Brock Hoffman. So you could go either direction if you want to move Tyler Smith. You want to keep him inside rather than maybe you take a tackle, 24 out. I just wrote offensive line. Right now, their running back one is Rico Dowdle. So running back, which is something they can, you know, hit later in the draft. And then I wrote defensive tackle. This has been kind of an issue for them for a while. They drafted Mozzie Smith last year, a little up and down. So those are my primary needs. And then I just, it's depth. Linebacker comes into play. Wide receiver, maybe wide receiver should be higher. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. The first two that I wrote down is interior offensive line and offensive tackle. Like, you just have to get more talent in that group. You're losing Tyler Biadasz. You're losing Tyron Smith. And it's like, okay, sure, you have some flexibility with Tyler Smith there to move to left tackle if you wanted to. But then the hole at right at left guard still exists. You know, there's still the question at center. Are you comfortable with that? You know, Terrence Steele at right tackle, he signed a good contract, but I mean, he was up and down last year. He did not play particularly well or particularly consistent. So it's just got to get better overall. When I look at their first round pick, I feel like that's where they have to go. And they're in a sweet spot. So there's going to be a good offensive tackle or even a good hybrid player who's a guard tackle there for them to be able to get. I agree with you, running back at some point. It feels like the easiest pick whenever I do two or like round two or round three mock drafts is giving them Jonathan Brooks from Texas, just because, you know, Jerry Jones, Texas connection. It just makes sense. He'd be RB1 on that team. And then the other two positions that I have listed are just, like you said, wide receiver. You're moving on from Michael Gallup. Do you want to improve the depth on that group? I know they've got Tolbert in there and they're hoping that he could kind of step in and be that vertical threat for them, but do you want a different receiver there? And then linebacker, you're right. You signed Kendricks, but you're losing Vander Esch as well. That off-ball linebacker, middle of the defense kind of a thing, is that something they're going to look for in the middle of the round? So I agree with you. I saw this pretty eye-to-eye in what their needs are.
Who do you got for the Eagles?
So for the Eagles, I have corner as my biggest need for this team still, just because when you look at Bradbury and Slay still being there, those guys, I think, individually have had good years, but they're getting a little bit older. There's been talk of both of those guys at different points throughout the last two off seasons of like, okay, are they going to be here? Are they not going to be there? Okay, we thought they were traded. We thought they were cut. Now they're back. They're signing a contract. So I think the inconsistency there of how much longer these guys are going to be there, I think corner is pretty big for them. And then, so this is a kind of a sneaky one. I have offensive tackle for them. Yeah. And okay, so like Jordan Mailata is great. Lane Johnson's great. And Lane Johnson kind of came out and said, yeah, I think I got a couple of more years left. But damn, like he's playing through a lot of pain over the last couple of years. And so I just don't know how much longer that's going to be a thing. And when I think about a sneaky team to trade up in the first round, you know, I look at 11 with the Vikings, 12 with the Broncos, 13 with the Raiders. All three of those teams, I think, would like a quarterback. All three of them are, going to entertain trading up for a quarterback. But probably only one of them is going to be able to do it. So what do the other two teams do? I think that might be an opportunity for the Eagles to maybe jump up at that spot and get like a Talisa Fuanga from Oregon State, who is like, okay, he could play guard for you. Him and Tyler Steen could work out a guard. And then when Lane Johnson ends up retiring, boom, you just move Fuanga right there at right tackle. So I look at a situation like that. If the Eagles wanted to be aggressive for offensive tackle, they could do something like that. But I mean, the team's obviously very, very talented, but those are the two places that my eyes went to first.
Yeah. I wrote offensive line, cause I think you could, I could see them going interior as well. I mean, they love drafting offensive linemen, even if it's a guy who's not going to play immediately. I could see them going there really high. Cornerback is the one everybody is looking at for this team. Because after that, you know, there really aren't that many needs. You're looking at depth because they were so active in free agency addressing the linebacker position. That is less of a need as it was glaringly so last year. I still think, though, that is a position that they could look to draft at. They bring in Devin White. They signed Zach Bond from New Orleans. N'Kobe Dean's supposed to be healthy. But that's one that I would keep an eye on. We'll see what happens at edge with them and Hassan Reddick. They did pay Bryce Huff a lot of money. Josh Sweat is staying. But again, this is an Eagles team that just loves adding in the trenches, continuing to add depth. And if Reddick does leave ahead of the draft, I wouldn't be surprised if they go there as well.
Yep.
So yeah, that's it for the Eagles. Okay, I'll do the Commanders next.
Okay.
So very active in free agency. So this looked very different from how it did at the beginning before free agency. But first, obviously, quarterback. Right now, Marcus Mariota is their backup, slated to be backup. There's no mystery what they're going to do with pick number two. After that, I wrote corner as the second biggest need. And then I wrote offensive line. Again, I just wrote line. They brought in a lot of guys, Nick Allegretti, Tyler Biadasz, who we just talked about. Mm-hmm. So right now you're looking at, I guess, Brayden Daniels is the starting left tackle.
Right.
Allegretti, Biadasz, Cosmi, Wiley. I mean, that's not a good offensive line. So I would very seriously consider trying to continue address that, especially with the rookie quarterback. And, you know, so they did sign Dorrance Armstrong, Cleveland Furl. I still would consider edge in the draft. And then I wrote tight end because that's another position that I feel like they could get better at. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that you played the hits there for them. I think offensive line for them is definitely more of an underrated need. You mentioned kind of bringing in a couple of players, but it's not like, okay, we signed Allegretti, we signed Biadasz, like we're good to go. I think the tackle spots, you know, like Wiley and replacing what Leno was for them at left tackle, that's still got to be on their radar as well. And they have two early second round picks to be able to do it. Obviously, I don't think they're going to move off of two and then like pick a offensive tackle in the first round. So I think they're going quarterback in the first round, but then pick 36, pick 40 at the top of the second round. Those are sweet spots for, I think, both trench spots, right? You mentioned edge as well. I think, you know, I've talked about this with certain mock drafts that I've done and on our YouTube channel. And it's like, okay, people were like, why do you keep mocking edge to Washington in the second round? They just signed all these guys. Well, sure. But I think that they would like for those players to be depth players. They're still searching for that guy that could really be that top edge rusher for them. So I agree. Corner is, I think, the sneakiest need for this team, because depending on what you think about Emmanuel Forbes, the people that like Emmanuel Forbes a lot still would have corner as a need for this team. And the people who might not like Emmanuel Forbes a lot, all of a sudden corner maybe becomes the biggest need on this team outside of quarterback. So yeah. I think that you're totally correct in being able to point that out, because depending on what you think about Forbes, it's either a need or it's really a need. So that's going to be a big question mark to answer for sure.
Yeah. And outside of Forbes, you're talking, you have St. Juice, you bring in Mike Davis, Colin Martin's still a position that they need to address, even if you're high on Forbes. And, you know, I liked him as a prospect. He struggled a lot last year. New coaching staff, we'll see if they can get better play out of him. I like what they did at the safety position and linebacker in free agency, although I wish they had kept Cam Curl. But
yeah, same.
Yeah. So, okay. Finally, wrapping up the NFC East, what do you have as the needs for the New York Giants?
Quarterback is the top need for this team. So I hope I'm not breaking any hearts there saying something like that, but it just, I get it. Daniel Jones is still under contract. I still think quarterback's the biggest need for this team. And I believe that the Giants are going to be aggressive in the draft to reflect that. Now, whether or not they end up moving off of number six and they can get a deal done to go get one guy that they like, somewhere in the top five, we'll see. But I think quarterback is the biggest need for this team. And I think wide receiver then is the next biggest need, right? If you can't get off of number six, if the big four quarterbacks, if you will, are already off the board, I don't think that they would dip into the Michael Penix or the Bo Nix well. I think that they would go one of those top receivers that would be guaranteed to be left on the board. It's a Malik Nabers, it's a Romo Dunze, whoever it is, immediately to me becomes wide receiver one on this team. So wide receiver is huge for them. I would also sort of say offensive line, But I actually like what they did signing Jermaine Illuminor and John Runyon, because no matter what happens with Evan Neal, if he works out a tackle, cool, you signed a guard and you already upgraded a guard. If you want to kick him inside, like if he struggles still at tackle, okay, you could put Illuminor in there and he could be fine. He can be serviceable. If Evan Neal's not good at either spots, okay, you just signed two guys, so it's okay. You don't necessarily have to play him if he's bringing down your offensive line and bringing down your team. So I say offensive line because I think that is still something to consider for them. But I do want to shout out what they did in free agency because I do like that. But to me, it's quarterback and wide receiver for this team is the glaring needs.
Yeah, quarterback and wide receiver, big ones. Offensive line is interesting because, like you said, it really comes down to how they view the veterans they signed and how they view Neal. Because last year, this was a non-functional offensive line. And
right.
Thomas was like really the only player you could count on at left tackle. And as you said, it's really rebuilt. I mean, you bring in Runyon, Luminor, Aaron Stinney. So you have like competent veterans that make it less of a obvious need. However, if there's a really good offensive tackle somewhere where they're picking, they already have the wide receiver. We'll see what they do at quarterback. It's still there. The only other position I would throw up is corner. You know, they drafted Deontay Banks last year in the first round. Outside of him, though, I don't know what – I think Adoree Jackson is still a free agent last I checked, so we'll see.
Yeah, I don't think – yeah, he's not on the depth chart that I'm looking at, so I think he is, okay. Yeah.
So that might be another position that they choose to address. New defensive coordinator, you know, moved on from Wink Martindale, so maybe different priorities, too, and what kind of players they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's the NFC East. Let's do the AFC East.
Okay.
I will go first with the New England Patriots. It's kind of similar.
It is very similar.
Yeah.
You picked a good transition team here with the Patriots.
It's quarterback and receiver.
Yeah.
And then I wrote offensive left tackle. I actually feel like defensively they're pretty fine. Maybe edge. Uche's on a 1-year deal, so I could see them wanting to bolster the pass rush, but it's really offensive centric for this team.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you completely. I think it's, you know, there's talk of the Patriots potentially staying at number three and like not drafting a quarterback or trading out from number three. And I get it. This team's got a lot of holes on offense, a lot of things that they would like to upgrade, but I just don't see this team trading off of number three. I look at what Gerard Mayo said right after his introductory press conference. And he kind of was like, we're going to pick a position that's very important and we're going to get a very good football player. And I think that he said that because even at the time, which was in the middle of January, they would have been comfortable taking Caleb Williams, Drake May, or Jaden Daniels, like whoever's going to be on the board at number three. I don't know if you say that even as non-specific as the statement was. I don't even know if you utter those words if you're not fully confident in taking a quarterback at three. So I think they're going to take a quarterback at three. And then I think the rest of the draft is going to be centered around how do we get playmakers on this team? How do we get multiple, whether it's a guy that we think could be a wide receiver one, or whether it's a specific type of a player and we'll go get a wide receiver one next offseason, whatever it is. I just think that it is all offense for the Patriots. I agree with you.
What do you have for the Miami Dolphins?
So the Dolphins, I think, I look at interior on both sides of the line of scrimmage. You lose out on Christian Wilkins. I think that's going to be big for them. Like, he's not a stat stuffer guy, but I think he's a high impact guy for the entire rest of the defense. So losing out on him is going to be tough. You bring in Benito. Right now, I think their defensive line, the way that I'm looking at it, is Zach Seiler, Benito Jones, Deshaun Hand. They've got Neville Gallimore as well, who they brought in. Jonathan Harris is somebody else who they signed, but it's like, man, they would love to, when I get to them in the early parts of the 20s in mock drafts, like if Byron Murphy the second from Texas or if Johnny Newton from Illinois are there, it's like, man, you hate to lose a guy and then just draft a guy because it makes you feel like the team didn't really get any better. But I feel like that'd be an easy plug and play for them. And then, of course, I think losing Robert Hunt as well and just upgrading along that offensive line, wherever you can get somebody that you think can be a little bit better than what we saw last year from the unit overall. Those are the two spots that I look at Miami with a roster that's really talented outside of, I think, the core middle of the trenches, interior defensive line, interior offensive line. That's where I look as their biggest needs.
I have those exact same needs. I think they did a really good job in free agency of bringing in really solid veterans to plug holes with departures that they had and really, you know, save money. I mean, Christian Wilkins walks for gigantic contract that they never could afford. So you hit a lot of singles and doubles. You know, you bring in Jordan Brooks, Seahawks linebacker on a really cheap deal. Kendall Fuller was one of my favorite signings of free agency. Shaq Barrett, Jordan Poyer. These are all good football players, and they give you, as we kind of talked about at the top, some flexibility going into the draft where you don't have quite so many needs to address, and you can focus on the trenches where the needs are the biggest. I think offensive line, I just wrote offensive line because I know Teron Armstead is back, but obviously, you know, he's struggled with injuries. So I feel like if a really good left tackle is available there, that's something that I would look at with that first pick. And then I have a secondary sneaky need. I wrote receiver question mark because we'll see what their vision is with Tyreek Hill in the future. You're going to have to pay Waddle, but that's a position. I know that they extended an offer to OBJ, which so that was interesting. Tellingly, though, I think that they want wide receiver three, maybe potentially, you know, someone who could succeed Hill, depending on what kind of profile they go for.
Yeah.
Okay. So for the Jets, you're going to really notice a theme with teams picking tight. There really is a lot of the same needs. I think this one's another pretty easy one where you're looking at receiver, even with the Mike Williams signing, that's a one-year deal, and offensive tackle. You know, you bring in Tyron Smith. It's kind of like similar. You have Tyron Smith, but again, both those positions, you need depth, you need the future, and you have a real opportunity at pick 10 to get a really talented player at both of those positions. I think it'll be interesting for them if one of the big three, like Odunze, Bowers will throw into there even, a pass catcher is there, or you have one of the many very talented offensive tackles. I would go tackle, candidly. Just, I feel like, you know, just you went through hell last year. You can't go through that again. Do you view it the same way? And am I leaving out any obvious needs?
I think that offensive tackle is by far still the highest need for this team, even with acquiring Morgan Moses, even with getting Tyron Smith. I mean, just for the reasons that you mentioned, these guys are both 33 years old. Tyron Smith hasn't played a full season in the NFL since 2015. So even if you don't, I mean, I certainly hope this isn't the case. Like, even if you don't lose Tyron Smith for a full season due to injury, unfortunately, he's good for missing a couple of games. And the AFC is extremely competitive. The AFC East is extremely competitive when it comes to winning the division in that wild card spot. So you can't necessarily afford to be like, Tyron's out 2 weeks. It's all right. We'll play this guy at left tackle. He's not very good. We might just kind of punt on these games. Like, you just don't have that opportunity. So when I get to number 10, you know, I look at guys like Olufoshanu from Penn State, Talisa Fuanga from Oregon State. The guy that I continue to love for them is Troy Faltanu from Washington, because Faltanu can play left tackle for you if you need him in a pinch, or he can start at guard for you immediately. So even if best case scenario, you have these two veterans at your tackle spots, he can still start for you over John Simpson at left guard. So you're getting value for him no matter what. So to me, he is my number one for the New York Jets. And then the secondary need, I think, would be wide receiver. I have tight end in there as well. Whether it's Brock Bowers or even getting some depth tight end, I think, later in the draft. I think that those are the three needs that you hit on, and I agree with that.
And the only one I would throw out is safety on defense. Otherwise, that defense is stacked. Okay, Buffalo Bills. Picking at 28, what do you have? This is an interesting one. I think this one is a little bit less chalky and obvious as some of the teams we've been talking about. What do you have as the Bills' biggest needs?
So I still look at wide receiver for them. Like, you bring in Curtis Samuel, who I like as a playmaker, but you know, I still think they need that field stretcher, right? You're missing Gabe Davis. And let's be honest, like, even when Gabe Davis was there last year, it felt like they were missing the Gabe Davis presence that they thought that they were getting. So I think a field stretcher there, you know, like an A.D. Mitchell, a Brian Thomas Jr., like somebody who can really get vertical for them, I think would be a welcomed addition to this group. It would really continue to put stresses on defense. And when you have that guy who is very reliable, I think in a vertical sense, with Josh Allen's arm, it truly opens up Stephon Diggs to be whatever type of receiver that you need him to be every single week. And to me, it's just with again, with Josh Allen's arm, how he can threaten to hit a 40, 50 yard bomb on you every single play if you give him that type of receiver. I think that that just opens everything up for them. I also look at corner, right? I mean, you're moving on from Tre'Davious White. I think that you got Rasul Douglas on one side, you got Christian Benford on another. If you have the opportunity to draft a really good corner in the first round, who you think can be a CB1 for you, that's where I look to first. I look at wide receiver and I look at corner as the spots where this team is still, even though I think the winning window is closing, like this might be the last year for this current Bills regime and this current Bills structure to be in a winning window. If you really hit it on certainly that first round pick, whether it's a wide receiver or a corner, I think you can really still compete this season if you can get something from them. So that's where I look on this roster as the two needs that I would love for them to pay attention to in the draft.
Yeah, I have the same ones. I wrote also offensive line depth, something that they could see them targeting, maybe the interior, and then safety right now. Their starting safeties are Taylor Rapp, Mike Edwards, Damar Hamlin is in the mix. Like they, I think Micah Hyde is still a free agent. So that's something I could see them. But there are also a lot of free agent safeties still out there right now, like your Justin Simmons, your Quandre Diggs.
Right.
And that's something I could see them going for in free agency. And then, yeah, receiver is where I keep looking for them at 28, just because of the names and the skill sets, which you alluded to. Okay, let's do the NFC South.
Okay.
Let's start with the Saints.
Okay.
Looking at 14. So I had edge, safety. Then I saw a piece of news today that I think is pretty relevant.
Yes.
That Ryan Ramczyk, who is their stud right tackle, one of the best in the NFL, might be considering or might not be able to play this season. I want to make sure I don't misrepresent this because of his knee injury.
Yeah.
And that immediately rocketed offensive tackle to the top of this team's needs, especially picking where they are 14, by the way. They'll have their pick of some pretty talented ones. Yeah, I that wasn't on my radar at all, but that suddenly becomes a pretty glaring need if that's the case.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you 100%. I would have had offensive tackle as maybe this team's biggest need even before the Ryan Ramczyk news of you know, he was off-season surgery on his knee, and they're kind of like, okay, well, he's not exactly where we wanted him to be yet, which is a little bit concerning. So I think that offensive tackle just overall, like there were kind of question marks about Ryan Ramczyk and how much longer he was going to play anyways, even before what we learned this week. And then you look on the other side and it's Trevor Penning, who sure they spent a first round pick on him, but Penning hasn't lived up to the consistency of what you need from a first round pick either. So in a year's time, if you're looking towards the draft and investments and okay, well maybe what's beyond 2024, there could be a situation where this time next year, they have moved on from Trevor Penning being a potential starting offensive tackle for them, and Ryan Ramczyk retires. And all of a sudden, you've got nobody left in the tank. So I think offensive tackle might be their biggest need, and I probably thought that even before this week. So then you just go overall the defensive line. You know, Cam Jordan, we continue to say this, not getting any younger. You know, you signed Chase Young, but he's been certainly up and down, certainly since he came back from his injury. Carl Granderson's been fantastic, but okay, what do you necessarily think of the guys in the middle with Kalen Saunders and Nathan Shepard? You draft Brian Bresee, but is Brian Bresee, do you have faith that he's going to develop into this really impactful interior defensive lineman for you? So I think edge rusher, a lot of people talk about, but I would just say defensive line overall, depending on what you think of those three interior players as well. So to me, it's trenches for this team. I think a lot of the skill sets, you know, you're moving on from Michael Thomas. Okay, you're going to need somebody to kind of pick up the slack there, but he wasn't the massive target guy that he had been earlier in his career. So I think you can do that, especially with how Olave was ascending and what Shaheed has been as a deep threat for them. So I think a lot of the other pieces are there. I think that you're just really focusing on the trenches.
I feel like I know what you're going to say for the Atlanta Falcons.
So for the Atlanta Falcons, it's something on defense. It's probably pass rusher is number one, but I also think that corner is a big need too.
That's my number two need.
So there you go. So I was talking with a good mutual friend of ours, Benjamin Solak, who pointed out to me that sure that they've got Clark Phillips on the outside and they could like him and he's promised, but he's probably more of a nickel player in comfort of how they would like to deploy him. That opens up a spot on the outside if you can upgrade in that area. And then AJ Terrell, I believe, is only on the last year of his deal. So what happens in that situation if, okay, maybe something happens or a free HD, you can't get a deal done. Maybe all of a sudden it's like a Calvin Ridley situation where Jags thought they had him all along and then boom, all of a sudden free agency happened and now he's not on your team anymore and you're wondering what happened. Well, they don't want that to be the case, especially at a position as important at corner. So they need to get better on the edge. They've got to get back, get after the quarterback better. So I think that that is the number one need for them. But corner, also sneaky close to that top need that I think they've got to really prioritize.
If Terry Fontenot tries to take another skill player with eight, somebody needs to stage an intervention. And even Falcons fans, too. I've been like, I keep watching.
What if he's good, Mina? Yeah, but what if he's good?
I keep going Dallas Turner at eight. I feel like that's probably the consensus pick. And
especially if they want to run a 3-4, right? Like if you want to have more of a stand up outside linebacker type, it feels like Dallas Turner's going to be your guy.
I keep getting Falcons fans who are like, but what if Odunze is there? No, I don't care. Don't do it. No, stop it. I actually have pretty similar needs for the Bucs, by the way. I wrote edge and corner. Maybe interior offensive line, tight end, but really edge and corner are the two biggest needs for me, especially having traded Carlton Davis away. Mm-hmm. You at edge, Shaq Barrett's gone. So you're looking at Joe Tryon-Shayinka, who just hasn't been what they had hoped. Yaya Diaby was promising, but mm-hmm. that to me is the most glaring need on this roster because they were able to bring back a lot of their other veterans, obviously Levante David, the guys on offense. You bring back Jordan Whitehead, which is kind of cool as a safety. But edge, and I like Zion McCollum. I actually thought he played pretty well last year. And then you've got Jamel Dean, but that to me is something that they're going to have to address in the draft.
Yeah, they could have gone out and gotten Mike Edwards too and just brought the whole like Super Bowl safety room back together. But they brought back Jordan Whitehead. So they got at least one of those two pieces back at Tampa Bay. But I agree with you completely. I think that edge rusher is the big one. You said it perfectly. Joe Tryon-Shayinka has been fine, but I think that they've wanted him to be more than fine and they'd feel a lot better about it. You lose Shaq Barrett, but Shaq Barrett, unfortunately, since the Achilles injury, getting up there in age, he wasn't, as they say, getting any younger. I don't know if you were going to see double-digit sacks from him ever again. So I think that it was made sense for both sides to move on, for Tampa to get a little bit younger in that area. They like what they had from Yaya Diaby, but I still think he is developing as a really great athlete, a powerful athlete as a pass rusher, but becoming more of that proficient pass rusher. So if they have the opportunity to take a really good one, like if Alaiatu Latu from UCLA is there in the middle of the 20s, like I love that pick for them. But trading Carlton Davis, where you can understand it because his play has been very hot and cold really since that Super Bowl season. You understand why you're moving on from him getting that third round pick back. All of a sudden, this corner room. Sure, I think Todd Bowles also really likes Zion McCollum, but it's like, man, there's a difference between saying that you really like him and then knowing that you are a starting outside cornerback for 17 weeks this season opposite Jamel Dean, and they're starting an undrafted free agent in Christian Izzy and at the nickel. So corner to me has skyrocketed up this board as if you get one of those top guys that happens to fall, or maybe if you were in rain, I look at, this is me personally, like Quinyon Mitchell, Terrion Arnold, Cooper DeJean. Like if any of those guys are on the board at, I don't know, like pick 22 or something, I'm picking up the phone. Like I'm picking up the phone if I'm Jason Light. Yeah. I'm moving up a couple of picks. I'm going to get one of those guys that I know can start at outside corner. Maybe if you love Kool-Aid McKinstry, they're comfortable sitting at 26 if he ends up making it there. But to me, it's just corner is the big one.
Yeah, they're in such an interesting spot in the draft with edge and corner as the needs, because the way I view this draft, I see three edge rushers who I have as a tier. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Latu. The others would be Turner, who we talked about, and Jared Verse. Mm-hmm. And then I've got four corners in a tier. You mentioned three of them. I would put Nate Wiggins in that group too. I'm really a big fan of his. So my question is, of those seven, do any of those players fall to 26? Probably, because it's such an offensive heavy draft. Mm-hmm. But if not, I would, because the Bucs are competing, their win now, and their need is so obvious, I too would consider making a move. The Panthers are in a very different situation. A lot of needs. And I don't think they can afford to trade up. So that would be a very bad idea. This is a
right.
Yeah. If anything, should be trying to amass draft capital. Very active in free agency, particularly on the offensive line, which looks totally different now. Mm-hmm. Adding Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt at guard. Yosh Nijman. It'll be interesting to see if he pushes and whether they consider him, if he pushes Ekwonu at left tackle. Mm-hmm. You trade for Deontay Johnson. I still have receiver first and foremost. It's Deontay Johnson, Adam Thielen, Jonathan Mingo, tight end. You sign guys kind of like a doppelganger of yours, Hayden Hurst. Or no, he's gone. Pardon me.
Oh, no. Yeah, he was there.
He's gone. So tight end is a glaring need for them as well. Mm-hmm. And then edge is the other very obvious and very dramatic need with Brian Burns gone. I mean, you could really, Trevor, point to so many spots on this defense, frankly, given the outflow of talent,
yeah.
Corner, safety, linebacker. Okay, pretty much every position on defense, except for maybe defensive tackle.
Right.
But edge is the only one that I would really prioritize because so much of this season is about helping and evaluating Bryce Young.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's exactly what I was going to say to start things off is you can look at this roster and you can point to so many different areas that you would love to upgrade on this team. But one, you don't have a first round pick. So it's not nearly as easy as like, okay, let's take a position that we have of need and we can totally cross it off with whatever we're using our first round pick on. Well, beginning of the second round pick 33 is close. I think you'll get a good football player, but that what you said there is the truth. The only thing essentially that matters about the 2024 season for the Carolina Panthers is getting closer to answering the question, yeah. Can Bryce Young play? Like, is he our starting franchise quarterback moving forward? And I think that's why they spent a lot of money on the interior offensive line. That's why they spent a lot of money, I guess, just on the offensive line in general. That's why you go take a chance on a guy like Deontay Johnson. And that's why I think the pick 33 is absolutely going to be used on a wide receiver, because you've just got to find the answer to that question or get as close to it as you possibly can. So I agree with you. It's some sort of pass catcher, some sort of weapon. And then if you feel like you have to upgrade along the offensive line as well, like some stud offensive tackle gets there and you feel really good about it, maybe you're making that move. But it just feels like no matter what it is, it's got to be able to evaluate Bryce Young better.
So the AFC South, let's start with the Titans. This was a team where the needs dramatically changed after free agency for me. They added Calvin Ridley. Actually, this happened after my last podcast. They traded for L'Jarius Sneed. We'll get to the Chiefs side of that. Loved it for Tennessee. Love the player. Love the deal. As I looked at the Ridley and Sneed signings in particular, I think I had the same reaction. I don't want to be presumptuous. I suspect maybe you had when you saw Tennessee was the team, which was, huh? So they think they're good.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. 100%. Like verbatim. That, it's like,
honestly. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
I wish more teams thought they were good. I think they're good. It sounds pedantic. I think the correct phrase is like, oh, they want to compete.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, it's very easy for us to sit back and say, you're not great. You should amass picks. You should try to rebuilding, whatever. It's much more fun when your team tries to compete. This is very much so a team that thinks they can compete. And depending on what they get out of Will Levis, that'll go a long way to determining whether or not their self-belief matches with the results. What it does do, though, however, is it does change their needs a lot. I have offensive line. Now, they did make some signings. You bring in Lloyd Cushenberry,
yes,
to play center for them. Right now, I think Petit Frere is the starting left tackle. Mm. This, I don't think there is a more obvious pick, maybe outside of Caleb Williams at one. The Tennessee Titans taking an offensive tackle at 7 has to be the most obvious pick in the entire NFL draft.
No, I agree with you completely. And kind of going back to, you know, what Tennessee's offseason has been, I think it seems so contrast to what we thought this team was going to do, because I think that there's a lot of regard for Mike Vrabel and how good of a football coach that he is. So like if you're going to move on from Mike Vrabel in a very surprising move, then I think a lot of people just said, okay, you're moving on from him in order to really start this rebuild. Maybe it's a year before you thought it was going to happen, just kind of ripping the Band-Aid off. But we thought, okay, you're moving on from Mike Vrabel, a coach that's done so many things for you, a coach that honestly has overachieved, it feels like, in so many different instances while he's been a head coach with the Titans. And you go, okay, I guess this means that they're just going to fully kind of go into that rebuild mode. Titans will compete in 2 to 3 years, whatever it is. And then, yeah, they spent a lot of money on Calvin Ridley, spend good draft capital and a lot of money on Legarius Sneed. And like you said, you go, okay, I guess they're in here. But offensive line, it's sort of the same questions that we have with Carolina, right? At this point, you've now gone all in at receiver. You've got Treylon Burks, you've got Calvin Ridley, you've got DeAndre Hopkins, right? You got Chig Okonkwo as well at tight end, who's been nice for you. You're moving on from Derrick Henry, but then you immediately supplement that by signing Tony Pollard. So it's kind of like one in, one out in that regard. The offensive line just got to be so, so, so much better, because you have Levis now with some starts under his belt from his rookie year. Now you get to really evaluate him in year two, year three, and maybe you strike gold and you get a franchise starter for you in the second round. And I think that that's the most important part. And I agree with you. We're locking in offensive tackle for the Titans at 7. I'd be floored if it was anybody else. Not that they haven't floored me already this offseason, because just like we talked about, they have, but it feels like that's one where they can't really get away from consensus.
I mean, looking at the roster, if Levis plays like a top 15 quarterback, they will compete
100% now. Yeah.
So when you think about it that way, I don't hate it. But that thing has to happen, which is he has to be above average. And that is heavily correlated with the play of the offensive line, which still is not good enough, to your point. So they will really have to find not just improvement in the draft, but immediate contributors, candidly. So we'll see. Very dramatic upgrade at corner. They bring in Shobi Awuzie, who's still coming back from injury last year. We'll see, how well he plays for them. Still a very good front. A linebacker was another need I had. I know they signed Kenneth Murray. I'm not a huge fan. Okay, what do you have for the Jags? Speed up. Sorry, I'm taking way too long.
No. So for Jacksonville, I mean, I think wide receiver is still big for them, right? Even after the Gabe Davis signing, I think brought in Gabe Davis to help round out a room that was going to be still centered around Calvin Ridley. And now Calvin Ridley is not there. So it feels like you've got a bunch of like complementary pieces at wide receiver, but you don't have that guy that you're building the passing attack around. So I really think that that's a missing part of their roster. So I think wide receiver is absolutely on the board for them at pick number 17. Even with bringing Gabe Davis in, I think corner as well. I know they signed Ronald Darby, but like, again, one of those guys like a Cooper DeJean, a Nate Wiggins, Terrion Arnold, somebody like that. If they make it to 17, you pair them with Tyson Campbell, who I think is a really great young corner. Now you're talking a fantastic young corner duo there in Jacksonville, which I think is a hole that they have on defense. So offensive line, I think I have a question mark for, right? Like, okay, if Anton Harrison's your guy, and I liked Anton Harrison last year, so I like the fact that he got some playing time last year. But Cam Robinson, going into last year of his deal, do you want to try to get ahead of that? Their interior offensive line didn't feel like it was that great last year, and yet they kind of gave out some contracts to like re-sign guys. So it's like, all right, well, you brought back Ezra Cleveland. I like the Mitch Morris signing. Brandon Sheriff, I think is fine, but obviously he's getting up there in age. So just offensive line questions overall. I don't think they're going to draft an offensive lineman at 17, but as we get a little bit later, things on day two, I feel like offensive line is something that you maybe want to look at for Jacksonville to plan a little bit of ahead here.
I wrote wide receiver, corner. I wrote safety. They signed a safety. I think with the Jags, it's unlike some of these teams where you have teams that signed players and I'm like, okay, that's no longer a need. With the Jags though, like a lot of the players they signed, I haven't alleviated the need for me. Mm-hmm. Receiver, corner, safety.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They signed players, but I still think that they should be better at those positions. But you hit it, wide receiver and corner, and then I would throw safety as well. Okay. This is fun because in doing this exercise, you go through the raw depth charts, and sometimes you're like, ooh, this team has more needs than I thought. Mm-hmm. I had the opposite experience with the Houston Texans, where when I pulled 100%. Up this depth chart, I was like, damn.
Right.
This is a good football team.
Right.
Receiver, still something that they could work on. You know, although huge on Nico Collins, you know, Tank Dell comes back. You have, but that's a position that I would like them to address. Corner, they did add Jeff Okuda. Mm-hmm. We'll see if that, you know, that's kind of a reclamation. Stingley was excellent.
Added CJ Henderson as well, who I completely forgot about until we did this exercise, that they also have CJ Henderson.
So don't hate that, but that's the other position that I would get better at. Outside of that, Trevor, I mean, offensive line depth, what are you looking at with the Texans?
I have three needs for the Texans, and sort of like when I had secondary, when I try to say they're like secondary,
yeah,
ancillary needs, I'd put a question mark next to it. For the Titans or for the Texans, I just have question mark. Wide receiver, interior offensive line, sure. Corner, like I guess. I'm just excited to watch this team again next season because yeah. They got so far ahead of where we thought that their rebuild was going to be with what D'Amico Ryans did for the rest of that team, what Bobby Slowick did from the offensive side of things, and then, of course, what C.J. Stroud was able to do and slingshot their rebuild into some winning ways last year. But, yeah, I agree. Like, offense, I think wide receiver is where I go naturally just because I selfishly want the best playmakers on this team now because Stroud's awesome. But you mentioned Nico Collins. You mentioned Tank Dell. They still have Noah Brown, who I think is fine. Robert Woods is somebody who I like as a preferred veteran in this league. I like Xavier Hutchinson. I like John Mechie, right? So it's it like even the depth guys at wide receiver, I'm okay with. And now with them not having when they were picking at 23, it was kind of a different conversation, right? If you get to draft a Brian Thomas Jr., an A.D. Mitchell, depending on if you're super high on Troy Franklin or not, like you throw him in there as well. Keon Coleman, maybe if you got to draft one of those guys at 23, sure, you maybe might take it. But now that they don't pick in the first round, now you're picking in the second round. Well, okay. Are one of those second round receivers going to be worth it for you? Probably not. So again, like, I guess I go to more depth, more competition on the offensive line. I think that's where I would look first. I love the Danielle Hunter signing. I also love the Danico Autry signing. I think that Autry's signing went underrated once Hunter signed there for them.
Yeah.
I like Azeez Al-Shaair getting to reunite with.
It's the opposite, right, of the Jags, where I'm like, oh, they signed all these players, but I still view them as needs. Whereas it's like all these players, I'm like, okay, good. You don't need to draft. You're good at edge. You're good at linebacker. You know, Joe Mixon, however you feel about the deal they did, I feel like they're pretty set at running back. Like, this just is such a well-built football team now.
I wonder if corner is where they look, though, because it is like, you have Okuda, who has potential, but hasn't been able to show it as much. You have CJ Henderson, who's a former first-round pick who just has not played well, so maybe you're not counting that at all. But that, I guess, is where I would probably put their biggest need, if you will, at corner. So other than that, though, offensive line, wide receiver, whichever guy's best player available.
Good team. What do you have for the Colts?
So for the Colts, I have cornerback. I think cornerback is pretty big for this team. I think they got a really young group, but they're still missing out on that lockdown number one type of a guy. I like Juju Brents. Obviously like Kenny Moore, but he is that slot nickel specialist for you. They have Jalen Jones, who got some good playing time last year. But again, if they could get the guys that we've already mentioned, Aquinnah Mitchell, Terrion Arnold, Cooper DeJean, I think that's really big for them. Tight end be huge. I think that we often mock Brock Bowers at this spot if he makes it to this area. And then I also look at receiver. And receiver as well. If you believe that Alec Pierce can be like a full-time vertical field stretcher for you, great. But if not, I keep saying the same names, but like an A.D. Mitchell, a Brian Thomas Jr. there in the middle of the first round, like that'd be sick for a Shane Steichen offense with Anthony Richardson. You bring back Michael Pittman Jr. You've got Josh Downs, who I thought was a gem of last year's draft. I felt like he should have got drafted higher. So, man, all of a sudden that offense looks great, especially with the offensive line trending in the right direction for what it was last year. So that's kind of what I look at for them, either wide receiver, tight end, if it's Brock Bowers, essentially, or corner.
Yeah, the offensive line bouncing back was so important for this team. Mm-hmm. When we think about Richardson and what he needs, suddenly you're talking about skill players again and corners. I feel like every mock I see has him going corner early on because it is such a glaring need because the front seven is in good shape. All right. We are not in great shape because I am, as always, doing a terrible job managing the clock. We are about halfway through. We're going to speed up. We're going to come back. Let's do the NFC West next after the break.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and older must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.com. West Virginia, visit 1800gambler.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Okay, this one can go pretty quickly. So I got the Niners first.
All right.
I wrote offensive line.
Yep.
And corner.
Yep. That's about it. I mean, the team's very, very good. Very good. I think that they could upgrade at right tackle if they want. I love the idea of getting like a Tyler Guyton or an Amarius Mims on this team. If one of them makes it to the back end of the first round, I don't think Mims is, but Tyler Guyton could. And I think that getting Tyler Guyton on one side, certainly in a locker room that already has Trent Williams, would make for one angry offensive tackle group. So I think that'd be good for him.
Yeah, I don't think Ike's going anywhere. Otherwise, I would say maybe receiver. But, you know, that is something that would be interesting because they might tell us, you know, sometimes teams can tell you what the future looks like with how they approach the draft. If they were to go receiver, that would certainly be very telling. What do you have for the Rams?
Defensive line. Right. Yeah. I mean, the impossible task of replacing Aaron Donald is obviously big for them. I would have said that edge rusher was pretty big for them anyways. I like that Byron Young, who I was decently high on in last year's draft, was able to get some good playing time. I think he's an explosive dude and just hasn't played a lot of football. Came from, I believe it was a community college, and then he gets to Tennessee and he kind of had an acclimation period at the SEC and he only had really 1 year of starting when he was there. So I like that he already got starting reps last season. I think he's going to get better there, but I like Kobe Turner, what he's done on the interior defensive line. I think he's a really good player for them, but I still believe that some sort of interior defensive lineman is needed for the Rams. And so those are the big ones to me, maybe offensive tackle if you feel like you need to upgrade in that area, but they've got some guys they seem to be comfortable with, I think. So trench is one way or the other, but I lean defensive line for this team.
Yeah, it's all defense for me, starting with the line, both tackle and edge you alluded to. And then I wrote corner. They did bring back Darius Williams, which was a signing that I liked, and they have some young players there, but that I think is a position they could continue adding. I mentioned that the Cam Curl signing, liked that was a loss for Washington. I think huge gain for the Rams. So, you know, defense. I think at 19, it's interesting. Well, one interesting thing about them picking at 19 is they're behind the Seahawks, who are picking at 16, who could also take one of the stud defensive tackles. And I think that will be very interesting to watch because like Byron Murphy, if he's there at 19, you are a Ram. However, if the Seahawks take him, and that is a thing that they could address, he will not be a Ram. In addition to defensive tackle, interior offensive line, I will say so the Seahawks right now, guard is a massive question mark. I wouldn't be surprised if they signed. There's still a couple of veterans out there, Risner, Tomlinson. So that's something that I would keep an eye on. And then still edge. You know, they've tried to address edge a lot in the draft in the second round, but if one of the big three, like Latu, is there at 16, I have to think he would also be in consideration.
Yeah, I look at offensive tackle as potentially a sneaky need for them as well. I think they obviously love Abe Lucas, but the knee situation kind of scares me because it's a chronic problem that he had like at Washington State. Now he still kind of has it in Seattle. So they would love for Charles Cross and Abe Lucas to be their bookend offensive tackles. But I just think that his health situation, you got to throw offensive tackle on the board as well. Like, again, if Troy Faltano from Washington makes it to them at 16, he's perfect for them because he can play on the interior if Lucas is great and you're good to go. Or if Lucas isn't, his knee is not recovering the way that you need it to, and it's not as stable as it needs to be, you can kick him out to one of the tackle spots there. So I think offensive tackle is the big one for me. And then something along the defensive line for some depth, or maybe getting a surprise starter there too.
Linebacker is also a need. They did bring in two guys, but they're both on one-year deals. Terrell Dotson, who was with Buffalo.
Right.
Jerome Baker from Miami. So that's another one to keep an eye on, but would be later in the draft. God willing. okay, finally, the Cardinals. It's almost easier to identify the positions that they are set at. What do you have for the Arizona Cardinals' biggest needs?
Yeah, there's a lot for the Cardinals. And that's not to say that I haven't liked what Monty Austenfort did last year. I really did. I love the Cardinals draft last year. It's just a roster that's been completely turning over. So there's just so much more to do here. A solidified wide receiver one is to me first and foremost on this team. And they're sitting at number four. I know they're going to have opportunities to trade back. It's going to be so hard to look at Marvin Harrison Jr. in the face and say, no, we're going to trade back and we're going to get somebody else. So I feel like that's a major need for them. Outside corner, I like Garrett Williams. It kind of sounds like they might like him more as a nickel, just, but I feel like him starting anywhere would be good. I know they signed Sean Murphy Bunting to a decent contract, but getting a solidified CB1, I think would be huge for this team. And then something along the interior defensive line is where I continue to go back to. Like, their projected starters, it looks like Bilal Nichols, Kyrese Tonga, Justin Jones, like they're all new guys. So very clearly they wanted to revamp their interior defensive line, the guys that got their hands in the dirt. But I think once again, one of those players who could be fantastic for them to make a difference as a pass rusher is very needed.
Would you rather have,
oh boy,
Marvin Harrison Jr. or let's say Quinyon Mitchell, Xavier Leggett, and another 2025 early round draft pick? This is the question.
I know. Cause Minnesota is going to be calling, right? Minnesota is going to say, we got 11, we got 23. You could have yourself Quinyon Mitchell. You could maybe get yourself Johnny Newton, or, you know, like a top edge rusher, whoever it is. And they already have like a bunch of other picks on day two where you could go get a wide receiver as well. So if they trade back with Minnesota, the haul is going to be insane. There's no way you can look at the haul of players they have and say, oh, I'm not going to give that an A for a draft grade. It's the easiest content in the world if they do that. I still think I'd go Marvin Harrison Jr.
Wow.
I just think he's that good. I think he's that good. And especially with Kyler Murray, like, that connection to me could become one of the best quarterback wide receiver connections in the NFL.
All right. We'll see. I every time people ask me, should they do the player or trade down, I cop out and I say, depends on the trade.
that's a veteran draft analyst in you. Oh, it depends. Yeah,
but I gave you some players and there's a lot of needs. Okay. Chiefs, very easy. There's three very obvious needs. Corner.
Yep.
That's need. Receiver, even though you got Hollywood Brown, he's on a one-year deal. And then left tackle.
Yes. I have the same offensive tackle, wide receiver, and corner. Those are the three big needs for me. Obviously, the team is coming off winning back-to-back Super Bowls. This isn't too difficult, right? Just get one of those guys who could be an impact for you at one of those spots, and the rest of the team is set up pretty well for you to take a run at a three-peat here. So I agree.
What do you have for the Broncos?
So for the Broncos, it's obviously quarterback, because right now they have Jarrett Stidham and Ben DiNucci.
DiNucci.
All respect.
I miss that.
All respect to Gucci DiNucci, Michael Irvin, he had the famous rant on that. But all respect to him. Quarterback is obviously the biggest need for the Denver Broncos. I think tight end is also a pretty big need for this team. Yeah. Like, if they end up getting left at the altar, if you will, trying to trade up for a quarterback, and they're sitting there at 12, they don't want to trade back. They're staring at Brock Bowers. I think they could potentially go that direction, although maybe they think that Greg Dulcich can evolve into being that great receiving tight end for them. I think corner opposite Pat Surtain is somewhat a need. I liked Amari Mathis at times, but he felt very up and down. I like Jaquan McMillan for sure, but I think he's more of a nickel for them. So that outside corner spot, and then what do you do at safety, right? Justin Simmons is gone. You bring in Brandon Jones. You got him and Caden Stearns. I think safety also becomes a pretty big need for them. So those are the spots that I look at with the Denver Broncos. But it's quarterback, and then everything else is a massive distant second for them.
Yeah, I also had edge. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Baron Browning. You got Nick Bonito, but that's going to be interesting for at 12 because they might have their pick of Verse and we'll see what happens with quarterback, obviously.
But
if you have your choice, let's say you decide not to go to quarterback. If you had your choice of Lautu and Verse versus, you know, some of the other options trading down, I think that you might take the opportunity to upgrade there as well. The roster, surprisingly more holes than I thought. I had the opposite feeling with them for the Texans, where I was like, ooh, a lot of areas you could upgrade here.
Right.
So the Raiders are interesting. I've got them next. Another quarterback is the obvious need. I wrote corner and offensive line. And that was kind of surprising for me because I kind of remember thinking like a couple years ago, oh, this offensive line is better than I thought. But suddenly I'm looking at it and I see there's, you know, quite a few areas that they could address both on the interior and at tackle. Colton Miller said at left tackle, but
right
outside of that, yeah, those are, and then corner, you've got Jack Jones, Nate Hobbs, Nickel, Ja'Cory Bennett, they drafted last year. It feels like this has been an issue with this team for quite some time now. Obviously, yeah, they've had a bunch of misses in the draft, but you've got an ascendant defense that played a lot better down the stretch last season. I feel like you could keep building on that at cornerback.
No, I agree with you. I think corner is a huge need for them. I think Jones can have one of those outside corner spots, but I think you can upgrade from Ja'Cory and Bennett. I think you can get a better CB on the outside there. So I think that's a big one. Yeah, offensive line is kind of sneaky for them, right? I think especially on the right side of that offensive line, I feel as though you can get better. And I think they'll have the opportunity to at number 13 with a guy who could be, I mean, shoot, like an Amarius Mims, a Talise Fuanga, depending on whether or not you think Olufashanu could flip over to the offensive or to the right side, if you think that he would be good there. But the right side of the offensive line is at least worth noting, because it feels like for the Raiders, we either go, okay, they're trading it for a quarterback, or they're drafting a quarterback, or we're just giving them whatever corner is still left on the board. But I do genuinely believe that they should be in on that offensive line conversation. So that's a good shout out by you, because I had that one noted as well.
The Chargers to me are kind of like your friend who everybody thinks is much more like financially well situated than they are, kind of like they're like the guy who's got like really flashy clothes, but then when you dig in, they're like they're in major, you know, credit card debt. And or it's more like Marge Simpson, where like they're wearing the same Chanel outfit over and over. I don't know.
I was going to say, it's just one fit that's like really expensive.
Yeah. And you're like, damn. Yeah. The Chargers, they're competing. And they're like, wait a second. Because when you do this exercise that we're doing and you start looking at the roster, low key, pretty similar situation to the Arizona Cardinals. Like so many holes on. I mean, receiver is the most obvious one, obviously, with Allen and Williams gone, but corner. Offensive line, you go center, depending on what happens with Lindsey. I don't think he's announced if he's retiring, but right tackle, defensive tackle, linebacker. I mean, you know, you got two edge rushers, but they're getting up in the year. Like, there's so many needs. And thus, I am going to present you the same question. I really think it's the same question that faces the Cardinals, which is you have such an obvious need at receiver. You will have your pick of one of the true blue chip receivers, Harrison Jr. or Neighbors, that's the bird in hand. Or because your roster is in such worse shape than people think, and I really believe that's true of the Chargers, would you consider that sort of Minnesota haul that we've been discussing to trade down?
Yeah, 100%. If I'm the Chargers, it's a really difficult decision for the Cardinals, especially with Marvin Harrison Jr. being on the board, but like, if they would be presented with this opportunity, the reality is that the Cardinals would have picked Marvin Harrison Jr. at four, and there's one of the four quarterbacks still on the board at number five. Minnesota's calling you. They're giving you 11. They're giving you 23, and they're probably giving you something next year as well to make that jump. Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be I can never get in the mind of these GMs and what they think is kind of worth it, whether it's a first-round pick or a second-round pick. But for Joe Ortiz and for Jim Harbaugh, who are basically going to rip this roster down to the studs. I feel like they're going to get their guys in here, getting two more first round picks this year, having extra draft ammunition next year. To me, it's that's very much worth it for the Chargers, because they need one, maybe two starting corners on this team. They need one, maybe two starting wide receivers on this team. You mentioned some of the holes that they might have on the offensive line, or at least some areas that they're going to upgrade. Like, the interior defensive line is fine, but you're kind of still wanting an impact player in there. You bring back Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa, but Joey Bosa certainly has been a little disappointing over the last couple of years. So how much are you really counting on that? They've got Nick Neiman and Denzel Perryman back now at inside linebacker. So it's like, it's kind of to your point. People don't talk about the Chargers like this, but you kind of could with the Cardinals, where it's like, okay, it's easier to name the spots where you're good.
Yeah.
And then you just have so many other holes on this roster. So for the Chargers specifically at five, if the situation presents itself where there is a quarterback that is worth coveting on the board for those teams that are outside of the top 10, I'd be fielding the best offer that I possibly could for one of those teams and trading down.
They need a running back. I literally almost every position you're like, oh, you might want to. I do like Gus Edwards, actually. Okay. We got two more. We're in the North. Packers are the opposite for me. Another team. The Packers and the Texans really are, I feel like, sort of each other's analogs in the NFC and the AFC, where like you got the exciting young quarterback who's like way ahead of schedule, and both rosters are very healthy. Just looking at this Packers roster, obviously they never do a lot of free agency, but they got the one player that like I think everybody wanted them to get in Xavier McKinney. It was such a glaring need at safety. Looking at this team, I actually had trouble finding really obvious areas of need, frankly, because again, it's not just with Love. They're ahead of schedule. Right receiver, they're so talented. Offensive line, a couple players are gone. Nijman, Runyon. You've got Walker and Tom penciled in, but I wouldn't be surprised just with the way they approach things if they continue adding depth there, maybe a starter. And then defensively, linebacker, I guess. I say that and they underperform always, or they've been underperforming in recent years. So we'll see how much of that is coaching versus talent. Trevor, I feel like this is a really good depth chart.
No, it is. And we have a kind of like a running bit on our show and our podcast every time that we do a mock draft and we get up to the Packers, we're like, we don't really know what to do because the Packers have these thresholds where they're not really going to go like below what their expectations are. But a lot of their needs necessarily on this team aren't like high priority needs. They've spent a lot, especially on the defense, with these high valued positions. They spent a lot of picks with tight end and receiver. And obviously you spend the money to go get Josh Jacobs. And sure, I think that interior offensive line, getting a flexible offensive lineman, something that they're always going to gravitate towards. I think Graham Barton would be good for them. I think Jordan Morgan would be good for them, something like that, where they're picking at the back part of the first round. But I look at safety. I love the Xavier McKinney addition, but you'll be able to get a good safety, I think, a little bit later in this draft. Yeah. And for the Packers, they've got 11 picks right now total in the draft. And I don't think they're going to make all 11. They're going to do some wheeling and dealing. They'll probably kick some of those picks down the road, maybe get into next year as well as trade for some future picks. But I'd still love Tyler Newbin on this team. You know, if they get Tyler Newbin from Minnesota and they pair him with Xavier McKinney, that's awesome to me. I like that reality. I think that linebacker is the other one that you mentioned, is like, you don't have to spend your first round pick to get what they need at linebacker. They already have Quay Walker. So if Jeremiah Trotter Jr. or a Junior Colson or even like a Peyton Wilson or something just becomes available for you somewhere on day two, you like that. And I think that you're totally right. The Packers should feel good about where they are right now. They have a lot of young investments. It's not like these guys have all arrived yet, but the bets are in, if you will, on this roster. And now it's kind of a, let's see how it plays out kind of a game with them.
What do you, speaking of very good rosters, what do you have for the Lions?
So the Lions, obviously, like corner now becomes a massive need with Sutton no longer on the team. So they trade for Carlton Davis, though. And so obviously you're taking the flyer. You're hoping you get more of the highs than the lows from him, like I talked about in the Buck section. I actually like the Amik Robertson signing, but when you sign two guys in free agency at a position that's as important as corner is, where there's not a lot of good corners that hit the market, and you want both of them to start right away, that's sometimes a tough ask. I like that they still have Emmanuel Mosley, because I was really excited about him on this team before he got hurt last year. So I like that they continue to keep him on the roster, getting him to rehab. I think he could potentially be a starting corner for them. But interior offensive line is the sneaky one for me, because you've got Kevin Zeitler, who is 34 years old, who you bring in to start because you lose out on Jonah Jackson. You bring back Graham Glasnow, but he's also 31 years old. And Frank Ragnow is only 27, but he's been beat up. Like, I hope he plays for a long, long time still, but I don't know if they even believe that that's going to be the case. So I wonder if a really good interior offensive lineman, like if a Jackson Powers Johnson somehow gets to them, if a Zach Frazier from West Virginia is on the board at the back end of the first round. We know that the Lions aren't afraid to pick the guys that they believe are the best football players. But when I look at the Lions and I look at their needs, those are the two that pop out to me, is still kind of fortifying the talent that you have at corner to make sure that you're good enough for a deep playoff run. And then the same thing and the same characteristics with the interior offensive line as well.
Yeah, it would be very Lions to just take a offensive lineman who won't even, like, you know, it won't be penciled in as a starter, although everybody has them going corner for the obvious reasons you lay out. I still think edge is a need. They bring in Marcus Davenport. He's been injured. That's more of a flyer. And then, you know, receiver is interesting because they have good receivers and they're going to pay Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Jamison Williams came on a bit, but it still feels like they could use a big perimeter weapon, and there are several of those in the draft.
Yes.
So depending on how things shake out, that's something I would keep an eye on as well. I think the Bears, it's funny because I like this roster, but there are a lot of needs. It's like, I like a lot of the players and I think they're going to be competitive, and I've been very complimentary of how they approach the offseason. But then when I was looking through, like, what might they do at nine after going Caleb Williams at one, there's so many directions that they could go in, right? Like, I mean, depending on how you feel about Braxton Jones, left tackle is on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Edge is very much on the table.
I agree.
Tackle is still an option.
Yep.
You bring in Keenan Allen, but receiver is another area way, you know, that people are giving them Odunze and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of I don't call them, they're not like, whoa, this is such a glaring and obvious need, but there's a lot of positions that they could upgrade at.
Yeah, I think this is another team where a lot of the bets are kind of on the table for them, right? Like, I look at, you know, since Ryan Poles took over, just look at their defense, right? I mean, Montez Sweat, Gervin Dexter, Zach Pickens, TJ Edwards, Tremaine Edmonds, Jack Sanborn. You re-sign Jalen Johnson, but then, like, Jaquan Brisker, Tyree Stevenson, Kyler Gordon, you bring in Kevin Byard. Like, all of these players have been brought in specifically by Ryan Poles. So, like, his bets are kind of on the table on the defensive side of things. You're just waiting for it to play out. Now, I look at that other pass rusher spot at edge opposite Montez Sweat, and I think, okay, that's an area that you could definitely upgrade. At nine specifically, if you wanted to draft a Johnny Newton from Illinois, a Byron Murphy II from Texas, if you believe these guys are going to be great pass rushers for you, I think that could make sense, because I like the interior defensive line guys they have, but I don't think they're flashy players. I don't think Pickens or Dexter or even like Andrew Billings, I don't think they're flashy pass rush players. So if you want better pass rush penetration from your three technique or just one of those defensive tackle spots, I think that's an area that you look. Wide receiver, I was shocked that the Chargers moved on from Keenan Allen, but I'm good for the Bears for jumping on that situation and bringing him in. If you are in a situation where you have already brought in Gerald Everett, you've already brought in DeAndre Swift, we assume that they're taking Caleb Williams at number one overall. If you then get Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers at number nine, all of a sudden, like, that offense, I mean, that's an embarrassment of riches for him to be able to throw the ball to. Now, the offensive line, okay, maybe it's not the best that's out there, but again, like, a lot of your bets are kind of on the table. Darnell Wright is there. Braxton Jones is there. Tevin Jenkins is there, right? So I look at this team and I think they're close to ready. I really do. If the right player falls to them at number nine, I genuinely think that this could be a playoff team next year. Like, I genuinely think this is a legitimate competing team that can really give teams a lot of run for their money if Caleb Williams is able to hit the ground running, because I think the rest of the pieces are just kind of there, and it's just about them playing well together.
I think that's why, you know, when I say like, I don't look at them and I'm listing a lot of needs, but it's not because the roster is not good. It's just because they could go in so many directions, I think, because all the positions that I'm listing needs at, they already have a number one. They already have receivers. They already have an edge. They already have, a left tackle, for example. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, they could get better. And so they're just options on the table. Vikings, I feel like, are a lot simpler. Quarterback, but also corner. I think that's the other thing that I assume everybody will be mocking to them, depending on however they might not have, you know, they might have to sacrifice that second first overall pick if they move, pick 23 and pick 11 to go up if that's what they do. But regardless, corner is still a need on this roster. And then my third one, I wrote defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Yeah. Just,
Interior defensive line, you know, John Bullard, yeah. Harrison Phillips, Jerry Tillery. It's like, again, they're sitting there at 11. If somehow they're not picking a quarterback or at 11 or they haven't traded up already, like that's the perfect spot to take the top defensive tackle in this class. And you can even take a top interior defensive lineman a little bit later in the draft as well. So I looked at that and then I wondered, like, wide receiver? Not, I don't think Justin Jefferson's obviously getting traded or anything like that. You just drafted Jordan Addison, but still, you know, Trent Sherfield's who you brought in to be that wide receiver three spot. You've got Brandon Powell. You've got N'Keal Harry. Like, again, could they set up a really good 1-2-3 with this team if they continue to invest in that wide receiver spot? So I feel like that's a sneaky one too.
All right, we're wrapping with the AFC North. I think that this is another one where it's pretty clear. What do you have for the Baltimore Ravens?
So for Baltimore, I think offensive tackle is this team's biggest need. Like, Ronnie Stanley's played more healthy over the last couple of years, but still, I think you're looking to either upgrade that right tackle spot, get a starter there, or even just have some insurance if Ronnie Stanley ever goes down with injury again. I think that that is the area that that I look at the closest when it comes to the Ravens. And then wide receivers, kind of the other one for me. I think corner has been talked about for this team, but I actually feel like an impact wide receiver might be more needed. I like Zay Flowers a lot, but Rashad Bateman, as I'm a Rashad Bateman fan, and he just has not been as impactful as I've wanted him to be. And when Mark Andrews went down last year, it felt like the playmakers were not there enough for Lamar. And so I think offensive tackle or wide receiver is where my mind goes for this team. But that's kind of assuming that, you know, Odafe-Owe or David Ojabo or both of them really step up on the edge for losing the veterans that you lost in free agency.
They'll sign someone in like August to play edge and they'll get 10 sacks.
I was going to say, they'll get nine sacks.
I actually feel like corner is another thing they might address in free agency. Bill Barnwell and I on NFL Live the other day were talking about like a Stephon Gilmore potentially. You could see like a veteran coming in. That's still a need for them. I have guard too. So just offensive line, receiver, corner. But this is, again, the Ravens are so hard to project because of their approach to free agency and how long they wait and their ability to seemingly onboard veterans at the very end who become impact players that it's like kind of hard to, you know, and so often in the draft, you just feel like they'll go best player. But you know, I think where they're picking, near the end of the first round, there'll be some interesting options for them. I'm going to put this next team in the same tier that I put the Packers and the Texans, which is to say a team where when I went through the depth chart, I was like, geez, that's the Cleveland Browns.
Mm-hmm.
They're loaded. I mean,
they've been loaded for like the last 3 years, it feels like.
I wrote both offensive line and edge depth, defensive line, like just depth in the trenches on both sides.
Yeah.
You had Jerry Jeudy. I would have had receiver. Maybe you still, they paid Jerry Jeudy too. You brought back Za'Darius Smith. So you have him, you have Okoronkwo. So it's not like a glaring need at edge. I mean, am I missing anything here?
I think maybe off ball linebacker depend. Like obviously Owusu-Koramoah has been fantastic, but you're signing Jordan Hicks it's kind of like a veteran fill in. Same thing with Devin Bush. Would you want like an off-ball linebacker that you can, I think they're drafting 53, 54, somewhere in the second round, like you might be able to get a guy who you're very comfortable playing with just two linebackers then with them and Owusu-Koramoah. So maybe that increases your flexibility. offensive tackle, I think, is one. You know, like you're hoping that Jedrick Willis plays really well this upcoming season. You drafted DeJuan Jones last year, but do you want another offensive tackle in there to sort of just be like waiting in the wings? Elijah Moore is coming into the last year of his contract. So I think I don't think wide receiver is totally off the table for this team, despite them bringing in Jerry Jeudy, especially if they want a certain type of receiver. Like if they are sitting at 54 and Roman Wilson or a Tez Walker or just like some sort of field stretcher is there and they really want one, well, you're not looking at your depth chart and going, oh, well, we drafted Cedric Tillman last year because Cedric Tillman's not that type of a player. So I don't think that would deter them from bringing another sort of like field stretcher in if they believe that that's an area where they can really improve. So off-ball linebacker, offensive tackle, potentially wide receiver. That's kind of what I saw for this team. But I agree with you. It's a really good roster.
It's like a top five roster in the NFL.
It is. It is. It's kind of just time for Cleveland to just be good, like play better.
Well, and they brought in not one, but two backup quarterbacks. You got Jameis Winston and Tyler Huntley. So we'll see what happens there. All right. The Bengals, a lot of quiet moves kind of on the fringes of free agency that I thought were pretty smart. I've talked about, I love the Geno Stone signing. You bring back Von Bell. Basically, they were like, okay, no, we need veteran safeties. We're not doing what we did last year again. Trent Brown, very cheap deal. I still have offensive tackle, even with Brown coming in. Mm-hmm. Receiver, because even if T. Higgins plays on the tag, they're going to need to replace his production eventually. They're going to pay. I feel like, too, if you're going to pay, if you know you're going to pay a receiver $1 zillion, you want to bring in a high draft pick, knowing that you can't allocate more money to that position. Kind of like Minnesota, right, with just Jordan Addison. Like, they know they're going to pay Justin Jefferson all of the money in the world. So, you know, you got rookies around him at receiver. I think with the Bengals, you're going to have to do the same thing with Ja'Marr Chase.
No, I think that's sound logic for sure. When you look at the roster overall and you just say, okay, where are the places that they might be able to upgrade? Tight end, maybe. Again, this is a Brock Bowers destination if he gets to this point in mock drafts, but I don't think that he's going to last that long. So are you then, you know, eyeing a guy like Jutavian Sanders or maybe a little bit later in the draft, like an Eric All or a Cade Stover or something like that? But I just think tight end overall is probably something that they're going to take a look at. Edge, if depending on how they feel about their edge rushing group, right? Because Trey Hendrickson's great, but true sack production, do they believe in Miles Murphy, their first round pick last year, enough to say, okay, we think this guy's really going to take the next step up for us this year? Because like Sam Hubbard is great as a base five tech defensive end. I think that can really be a well-rounded player for you. But again, like it feels as though Hendrickson's kind of your sack master, and it's sort of like just an overall defensive line committee after that. But do they want another star that they can try to get in there? They might be able to have one on the table for them at the beginning of the first round. So potentially taking a swing at an edge rusher, I think, could be something that's on the board for them. And then you mentioned it. I think receiver is the ultimate wild card. What are their views on T. Higgins? Do they really think that they're going to keep him for the long term? Do they think, okay, we'll go all in this year, but we'll go all in with another great receiver option so that when Higgins leaves, we'll get the comp pick later. We already have the guy to replace him. We're already fully prepared to pay Ja'Marr Chase because we've already got the next guy on a rookie contract, like you said. So that's kind of where I'm at with Cincinnati's roster.
It'll be interesting to see if they take a receiver at whatever point they do. I think they'll take one at some point. You know, the question is kind of how early and what type of receiver, because Tyler Boyd is not on this team at the moment. We'll see what happens with him. Higgins, you might be drafting to replace him. So it's kind of like, do you want, you know, another big-bodied guy with a big catch radius who can win downfield, or are you looking to replace maybe more Boyd's production? Like a guy like, like a Ladd McConkey, for example, would be pretty cool in this offense. Again, that would obviously not be
Ladd
first round.
Ladd would eat in this offense.
I mean,
Ladd would feast in this offense.
Can you imagine all the two-eye that they face? Yeah, I don't know. I'm very intrigued. This is another team where what they do in the draft is going to be very telling of what this offense is going to look like and sort of their long-term plans. Okay, well, speaking of receivers, the Steelers. I assume that's one of the needs you have for them. What are your needs for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Yeah, I think receiver is obviously a big one. You trade away Deontay Johnson. You've got George Pickens in there, and the other guys are Quest Watkins, who you bring in, Van Jefferson, who are fine. But you absolutely need another high impact wide receiver, which is now firmly on the board for them, I think, in the first round. Potentially interior offensive line as well. I also think that they could upgrade at offensive tackle, but it feels like they like Dan Moore Jr. a lot. So I just don't know. Like, that's a need for me for this team, but I can keep shouting that on the rooftops. And if they're not going to draft a tackle, then I guess they're just not going to draft a tackle. But I at least had to say that for my own sake. I think the other spot on the defensive side of things is of course, corner. You know, this was a much older group last year. They bring in Dante Jackson, who they got for the Deontay Johnson trade, but there's a reason why Jackson was available for trade. I like Darius Rush, but I see they've got him kind of like penciled in at nickel, or at least the depth chart that I'm looking at right now. They need somebody opposite Joey Porter Jr. In a perfect world, I would love Joey Porter Jr. to be their CB2. Like, I would love, like, if this team could get a Quinion Mitchell or a Cooper DeJean or something like that, where I think they are the CB1. If you tell me that you've got one of those guys as your CB1 and then JPJ is your CB2, I think we got a good thing going on at that point. You got a really good situation in the secondary. And so that's what I would be searching for. Not just any corner, but like a corner that's going to truly change and upgrade your secondary room. So that's kind of how I would look at the Pittsburgh Steelers right now.
Total agreement on those positions. I'm really, it's just identical to what I've written down. You know, having now gone through all 32 teams, you notice some trends. Not a lot of edge.
There's not a lot of edge.
Yeah, like, because I was just thinking about that. Like, I was thinking about that, you know, we both said offensive tackle a lot. Corner is, when you were talking about corner, I was like, ooh, a lot of teams need corners.
Yeah.
Edge is, it seems like a lot of teams are like pretty well situated at edge. That's kind of the most surprising takeaway for me.
I wonder if that's just like mock draft trends in our brain, because we don't really know what to do with this edge rush class. Like, if the edge rush, like, if the edge rush class was better, and we were consistently mocking edge rushers with confidence in the top 20 or top 15, I wonder if this would look a little different. But because maybe we like the edge rushers in this group, but it's not like they're, we love them. We like love so many different edge rushers. I wonder if that kind of maybe goes into it. But I agree. I think that there's a lot of teams that signed a lot of different edge rushers. There's a lot of different defensive linemen that kind of switched teams throughout the league over the last month. And maybe that just goes into like what we said, that you're filling the roster holes. And so maybe edge was a lot higher for these teams 2 months ago. And since free agency, we just go, yeah, I mean, they could use an edge rusher if a good one falls to them, but it's not this major priority over some of the other glaring holes that are on the, that are on the roster.
Yeah. And I skipped, you know, like the Cardinals need edge, you know, that's, there's teams that I didn't really into it too much, but yeah, maybe it's that, maybe it's teams have gotten better at scheming up pressure. A teams like, you know, the Vikings, the Ravens, we're like, yeah, Ojabo away, but they'll figure it out. You know, maybe the rise of simulated pressures. I don't know. It's just kind of an interesting trend, but we'll see. I don't know. This was fun. If you're listening and you can let me know in the comments on YouTube if I missed out a very, if we missed out on something very obvious for your team. I think we hit all of them pretty well, though. And if you guys don't already, you should follow Trevor on Twitter. What's your handle?
At Tampa Bay Trey.
At Tampa Bay Trey. I forgot that you, the Bucks, I should have let you do the Bucks. The Bucks are your...
We hit it. We were good. We ran the whole gamut. It's all good.
And then you are on various podcasts at PFF, correct?
I appear on the PFF NFL show. Myself and Connor Rogers host an NFL draft podcast called the NFL Stock Exchange. And whatever else I can get into at this point of the year, because I can't stop talking about draft stuff because I love it. So those are the two main ones.
I met Connor at the Combine. We were sort of stopped talking in the entryway to our hotel. And Xavier Leggett walked right between us. He is a very large human. I'm a fan of him.
Did you get to hear him talk? Because he is country as can be. Yes.
Good player. Good football player.
He's a good football player.
We'll be talking about the skill players in the coming weeks very soon. I think after this, though, My next podcast is Quarterbacks with Daniel Jeremiah. So that'll be a lot of fun. But this was a ton of fun as well. Thank you so much for Trevor. Thank you to everyone for tuning in. And thank you, as always, to the producers and people behind this program, Kirsten Sebecki, Anthony Jimenez, Owen Saylor. And yeah, check us out on YouTube. Bye.